Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today. As a young girl, she would watch films with Jodie Foster or Natalie Portman, things they had done when they were the same age as she was at the time, and it made her realize she wasn't limited to just doing musicals at school, that there were dramatic roles that someone her age could play, and she decided she wanted to try that, and she has succeeded. Welcome Emma Nelson to the podcast.
A-OK.
Hey everyone, my guest today is Emma Nelson. Emma stars in The Unforgivable alongside Sandra Bullock for Netflix and made her big screen debut in the film adaptation of the best-selling novel Where'd You Go, Bernadette, helmed by Academy Award nominee Richard Linklater. Emma played the character of Bee in that film, the daughter of Academy Award winner Cate Blanchett, and the film also stars Billy Crudup, Lawrence Fishburne, and Kristen Wiig. A native of the Chicago area, Emma has participated in many local theater productions, including a lead role in the pre-Broadway production of Trevor the Musical, which was produced and directed by the renowned Mark Bruni. Hey, Emma Nelson.
Hello.
I spent last night watching you in The Unforgivable, and that is such a powerful movie. It leaves you with, in some ways, more questions than you even had going into the film. But you are phenomenal in this movie.
Thank you so much.
It's so devastating.
The first time I watched it, I was, I remember getting the link to the screener at school. And obviously I'm not going to I can't just open up my phone and watch Netflix at school. But I definitely could, but probably not, you know.
Yeah.
And I just remember I was so antsy the whole day. I had to go to, for my PE, I take a dance class, and we had a little bit of a yoga day that day, and my heart's racing. I'm so excited. It's been it feels like it's been forever, and I finally get to see it, and I have to wait until the end of the day. I'm so glad that you got to see it, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts about it.
Well, first of all, before we get into the movie, let's talk about how you're still in school. Are you a senior at this point?
I'm a senior, yeah. So I am lucky enough to be able to have enough credits to graduate. My last day of school will be December 17th. So I have the rest of this week and next week, and then I am done with high school, which is such a strange a phenomenon to me, because I don't know. I think that as a young person, you always feel it will go on forever. And I still am not really processing, I'm not going back next semester. That's it for me. And I'm not, I'm not planning on going to college. So, it's very strange because I've spent my whole life in school, obviously, to come to the understanding of it's done, it's over.
Yeah.
This is it. It's very, very weird. But I'm
huge.
Really excited.
I bet. And the idea that you can kind of, I can't believe we're kind of like, if there were an advent calendar of your graduation, mm-hmm. we would like be at the very last tabs.
I know. I need an advent calendar. I feel like I need some motivators to get me going.
A marker. Yeah.
Right.
Some kind of, well, when you started kind of this journey of becoming not just someone who like is an appreciator of the arts, but like, this is now the centerpiece of your life in terms right. of what you do and what you think about and where you go every day when you're not in yeah. high school. Yeah. How did you sort of make the like sort of pivot from, I love this, I love yeah. musicals and I love singing and I love all this yeah. stuff, to I want to do this in earnest as a, like a professional person?
Well, I think that I can really look back on watching performances of young actresses actually closer to my age, like Jodie Foster and Natalie Portman, are names I always bring up when I talk about what made me, like performances that really convinced me that I could do this huh. professionally. Not like I hadn't had the desire to or wanted to, but it was kind of like, I knew that musical theater could be attainable for me. You know, I had gotten some parts and I was having fun there, but watching young women like Jodie Foster and Natalie Portman in the earlier stages of their career, and even people closer to my generation of actors, I think watching them on screen being like, wow, I can actually achieve this now. And I don't have to be on, you know, like a, I can be in serious films and pursue acting the way that I want to, because I'm seeing girls like myself do it
right.
on screen.
Right.
But I think it's a lot of my inspiration and my drive to want to be a performer and an actor came from just how much I connected with movies, which I bring up often, is because I just, my connection with movies is the reason I have a connection with acting and performing. And, you know, those performances by those young women, especially, I think really, I had never seen such dramatic performances by girls my age.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, wow, this is something I can actually accomplish. This isn't just some pipe dream, unattainable thing.
And is there someone in your life sort of curating things for you to watch? Are you finding them on your own? Like, how are you seeking out the stuff that's inspiring you?
You know, my family, we've always been like, I hear from some people, they're like, oh, we're not big TV people, we're not big movie people, which I've never understood. Like, they'll be like, I don't watch a lot of movies. I don't watch a lot of TV.
You're like, what do you do all day?
No, I'm like, I can't think of any of us. But I mean, we've just always been the type of people to the activity at night as we go and watch a movie. Mm-hmm. And not even necessarily in theaters.
But as a family.
Yeah, but just like, whether it's my mom and I, my sister and I, we've always done it as long as I can remember. And my dad and I, actually, he introduced me to one of my favorite movies, which is Ordinary People. Which is a wonderful movie that I love. So I think, you know, when it comes to older stuff like that, it's my older stuff. It's not that old, but it's my parents. And then, you know, sometimes my manager, Lisa, one of my managers who has been with me since I was 10 years old. She, as I was, you know, coming into to being more comfortable with acting on screen, would recommend movies for me to watch just with different auditions, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh, check this out, this is like this. And I think just through that, you know, she's definitely helped me with the recommendations a lot, but I also am fortunate to have a family who also loves movies. So.
Wait, so you at 10 years old sort of made mm-hmm. the jump to starting to audition for things beyond school or community yeah. theater projects. Yeah. So how did that happen?
Well, it was kind of a strange, I don't know. It was just like, I like to think of a bit of a predetermined path that I don't know about. I'm not particularly religious, but I'm a little bit spiritual in that way, where it was strange. We had a recommendation. I was doing some community theater thing that, and we had been talking, my mom and I had been talking to a friend I had made and her mom, and she goes, oh, we heard of this, you know, manage these people who are, you know, great managers. And I know that you're interested in that. You should go check it out. And it just felt, it was very good timing, but I think that also I was meant to be connected to Lisa, my manager at that time. And I wouldn't be where I am today without her. And I went and I was a little 10, 11, I don't remember if I was 10 or 11, year old girl with like really short hair. I had a pixie cut when I was younger, so it was growing out. It was in these French braids. And I remember going there and being so scared. And I was just so excited when I got the opportunity to start auditioning. And I remember like my first script that I would get like my sides. I didn't know what the word sides meant. And, you know, going into audition and I, you know, it was just like, all right, here you go. Like, we're going to start doing this. And that's really how I learned to do it, was just by throwing myself into it. Like, you just throw yourself in the pool. But I mean, it didn't really feel like that because I felt like I had been prepared, not really on the technicalities of it, like the garb or whatever. What's the word for slang, like acting slang? But
I want to know acting slang.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, other than sides, I can't think of anything.
Okay.
I was
right, but like sure. Your mark, but, stepping on your mark and sort
right,
of
right,
slating your
like
name
that.
And yeah.
Exactly, like I didn't know what a slate was. I had right. never done that stuff before. And I just, once I got started and I got these opportunities, it's like, oh, it only took a taste of it. And I was like, I can't go back to theater. Like, I am so in love with this. Not that I wasn't in love with theater. I totally was. But I was like, if this opportunity comes, I'm not turning it down.
And is this in Chicago?
Yeah, this is. So I live in a suburb outside of Chicago.
Okay.
So it's there. When I say, you know, from Chicago, I think it's easier than being like, I'm from X suburb 30 minutes outside of Chicago. That
right,
know.
Right.
But yeah, it is. And I honestly, there isn't a huge, it's not like LA or New York where around the corner, every person's an actor. You get in an Uber and they're an actor too.
Right.
It really isn't. It's a very big place for theater. There's great theater in Chicago, but for the film acting, not so much. Like, stuff doesn't really film in Chicago. And I was really, really lucky to land on great people who have stuck with me since the very beginning.
And kind of early on. I mean, it might have not felt really
quick. No, it is. It's early.
So Where'd You Go, Bernadette was like a really best-selling book. Everyone, even if they hadn't read it, it's the greatest title ever. So they felt like they did.
Yeah.
And so is that something that was casting in Chicago, or did you have it make a tape and they sent it off to LA or New York or wherever, or Texas, wherever Linklater
yeah,
lives?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So I made the normal tape. I remember it was a monologue straight from the book.
Okay.
And a lot of Where'd You Go, Bernadette is written in Bee's perspective, which is my character. And then they had me send a few minutes of just me having a conversation with someone, which was very strange. It was just the person behind the camera, like the reader, asking me some questions about my life. And I just answered them.
Wait, so they did come to Chicago to do?
No, it was just a tape that we sent off. That was just a part of the self-tape. Which was weird. I had never experienced that as a part of an audition before, and it wasn't dialogue. It was just the monologue and the conversation. And
so you reacting when you say the conversation, like, are you improvising?
I'm not in character at all. It was just, they wanted to see me as Emma, the person talking about my life.
Got it.
Which I'd never done before, and I have never done it for an audition after. And
do you remember what you talked about?
What did I talk
it's
about?
It's a while ago now.
I was 12, so that would be five years ago.
Yeah.
I think they asked me some interests of mine. I think I talked about how I love writing. And I remember talking about how I love the Beatles, because that was a part of the monologue too, was there's a lot of references in the book that didn't make it into the movie, but in the monologue, the Beatles were referenced. And so I talked about that a little bit. And I remember it was 2 weeks later that we got feedback, and they're like, they asked me to come out to New York, and they flew me out to New York to meet Kate and Billy and Rick in person. And so I go from 12-year-old auditioning self-taped to in a room with Kate Blanchett and Rick Linklater. And I just went in and I did what I could. And I think now, with some perspective, Rick told me, like, I left the room and they're like, yeah, she's the one, that's it. But I think that there's a lot of clearance that has to go into girl with absolutely no experience being cast in a huge role. You know, like, how are we going to know that she can do this? And, you know, Rick really, I'm just really grateful for him to, you know, for believing in my ability. And I, you know, we filmed it, and well, I got the role, it was like a month or so after. I was so nervous because they kept telling us, like, a few more phone calls, like, we have to, you know, clear what X, Y, and Z, we don't know yet. And I just remember the day of getting the role. And it was before, it was, I think I got it in May, and then I went out to film, start rehearsals in June of 2017. And my birthday's in June, so I just turned 13. But I just remember thinking, I'm like, I couldn't ask for anything. I remember being like, I cannot ask for a birthday present right now. I literally have everything that I could ever want going out to do this. So it was a crazy kind of experience that I think is baffling to me to think back on it, that it just kind of happened that way. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get into it? Like, did you do commercials before this? And it's just like, nope, just jumped right in.
Yeah. And in terms of, like, once you're there, I mean, B is a starring role in this film. You had, I mean, I feel like a non-actor when people are like, how do you learn all those lines? But it is new muscle. You had a lot to learn and do. Was there a rehearsal period, which is not always the case for films?
Yeah, there was. I think I've heard from other actors that Rick has more rehearsal than most films. Mm-hmm. By far. And we had like an entire month of rehearsal to go through everything.
Wow.
We would just kind of do it like every day. We would sit with Kate. If it was just a scene with Kate and I, then it would just be me, Kate, and Rick. Or if Billy were there, then he would be there. But like before any scene, we would have to have like a whole, it would be like an hour long, even for just a short scene. Like I remember my scene with Kristen Wiig. We had to go in the conference room before we could film it. We would have to set up a meeting the night before to go over everything, which I love about working with Rick, is like that experience was so unique. And I felt like even as a kid, I got the creative license to, I was trusted that I know B. I with my research, reading the book 1,000 times, and, you know, my experience getting to know her as a character, that I got to, you know, have input in the script, which was really, really cool, especially for a first time anything. And, you know, also 13 years old.
Yeah. But you were really channeling that character, right? I mean, there's a magical fusion between where Emma ends and B begins. And I mean, you obviously were meant to get that part, right? Like there was nothing you could do to get in the way of it, because there was just this seamless, I mean, I keep saying fusion is the word that comes to mind, because it was so organic and exciting. I think about that month where there are all these people trying to make it happen for you, but you have no idea what's going on.
I didn't. It's crazy to think back. I wish I could go and tell my young self, like, it's going to be, you'll be fine. Just wait.
Like, go do your day. Right. Enjoy having nothing to do today. Yeah. So that started before. So that was the beginning of you sort of leaving school, like leaving Emma's life to go do this other thing. Where did Bernadette film?
So Bernadette filmed in Pittsburgh. And then we also filmed in Greenland.
Wow.
People ask me a lot. They're like, did you actually go to Antarctica? Which is, the answer to that is no. Mm-hmm. I went to Greenland, but I think it was just as stunning.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. And on the boat, we were in a hurricane. It was a category 1 hurricane while we were filming it. And I was starting my 8th grade year. I wasn't there. But I remember everybody was so sick, except for me, because I had a scopolamine patch, I think it's called, which is like a really severe anti-nausea patch. And my mom and I joke about it to this day, but everybody was freaking out because the storm was so bad and people were seasick. And our producer, one of our producers broke her leg.
It was a disaster.
They're like, like with my Dramamine and my scopolamine. And I couldn't tell you, cause I'm an anxious person. Like I have anxiety, but for some reason on that boat, I'm like, I'm fine.
Just That's 8 incredible. Days,
which is, it was crazy, but it was such a beautiful experience to be able to film on location like that.
So did your mom go with you both to Pittsburgh and Greenland?
Yeah, she goes with me everywhere, primarily my mom. I'm sure my dad would love to go, but it is kind of been that way. Mm-hmm. My mom has flexible work for her work. And my dad went with me at the beginning of Bernadette. My mom had a surgery. And so it was really fun. I mean, we were all in an apartment and I had some family drive up during filming and visit. And it was really cool. It was a great experience.
So cut to The Unforgivable, which is also like an incredibly star-studded cast, very different in tone and sort of the vibe and the feel of that film. Also, you can tell me how it worked, but in the middle of all this is COVID. And so mm-hmm. a lot of things were in production and then had to start and sort of recalibrate. How yes. was The Unforgivable affected? And did you have to film with all these new protocols or was your stuff done already?
Yeah, well, we did. So I started filming The Unforgivable in January of 2020, okay. Which was the calm before the storm. And we were in Vancouver, Canada, and my mom and I were. And I remember I was filming January and February. I would kind of go back and forth. And then I was there in March, the beginning of March. And I remember my mom and I, because like I mentioned, we watch a lot of TV movies together.
Yeah.
We were watching this documentary. I think it was actually a Netflix documentary. It was something about like pandemics, which is so weird. We like look back on this and I'm like, oh my God, little did we know. It yeah. was about like what would happen if there was a pandemic or an epidemic. And we were watching, I was like, that's crazy. And back then it was like, we thought of COVID as like Ebola, like, oh, maybe there'll be a couple cases, but we'll take care of it. It won't be any, it's scary, but it won't be anything that'll probably affect our lives, which is crazy. And then we flew home. I went back to school for a day and then March 14th happened and we got sent home. And I realized, you know, we all knew that it was going to be shut down. And it was kind of up in the air. We knew we were always, obviously, you know, there's no like, oh, we're going to shut down production and never finish it. But I didn't know when. And things were just too crazy to go back. And so luckily enough, we were able to go and we filmed. I was there for the entire month of September 2020. So we, you know, they took that summer, they edited what they had.
So the family stuff, all that stuff got shot later.
Which I think Nora, the director, says a lot. Her goal was no one should be able to tell what was shot before and after pandemic.
Well, that is 100%. That was very successful.
Yeah. And I think it was too. But you know, it was very different. There was a lot of different crew members. We had like a totally different hair and makeup team, like, but the solutions were so creative to how we would work around COVID. You know, everyone, this was before the vaccine too. And so everyone wore N95s anytime we were on set that we were not filming, between every take and face shields. And there were different zones that required different levels of PPE. Like if it was a close contact zone, it would be like the maximum amount of PPE. And it was like, we got tested 3 times a week. We had to quarantine for 2 weeks. We could not leave our apartment. And I had my puppy with me. I brought my dachshund, who at the time was like 6 months old. And so he had somebody who would come to our apartment, take him and walk him down the street because we were in quarantine.
Yes, you couldn't, right?
No. And so, the whole time someone had to do our grocery shopping for us. We couldn't go sit at restaurants and we had to be super, super careful. So it was hard. It was like really isolating. And I think by the end of it, kind of felt like I was going crazy.
With your mom and dog. And yeah. Think about I have so many friends filming who were by themselves all the time. Right.
I am looking forward to and simultaneously kind of dreading turning 18 because I'm like, I want to take my mom with, like, I need company.
Yeah.
I can't imagine just sitting alone, like in a city I don't know. Cause that is kind of how it works. You just are flown somewhere, you get in a car, you go, and then you work. And as much as it's great to be on set with people, when you go home at the end of the day, having that company there was so helpful. But I was glad to go home because I was, I was there for, a straight month. Usually when it's like, oh, I'm there for a month, it's like you get to go home on the weekend or something like that.
Not that, not during these protocols, for sure.
Yeah. In Vancouver, there were other productions set up that would, they would like all go down with a case of COVID, like Domino's was so scary. We never did. And that was great. And it was, I think it's such an impressive feat that we were able to be so safe, even pre-vaccine.
It's incredible. I watched a short interview with Sandy, who was talking about this unbelievably powerful scene with Viola Davis that she has, and that was in fact one of the things shot during COVID, and the fact that they were like 15 feet away from each other and each of them masked and shielded during the coverage of the other person. When listeners watch the movie and have that knowledge, there is nothing about how that scene is played that you would ever know that anyone wasn't sort of, looking at each other deep into each other's eyes and sort of feeling, the energy of that. It's really kind of incredible how deeply invested everyone is. The movie is about, someone who is incarcerated for a murder. There are a lot of questions around the crime. Some of it's told in flashback. There's an unbelievable reveal toward the end of the film. That was really one of the best of its kind. I too watch a lot of film, television, and theater. And I thought that was incredible. And people will know what we're talking about once they see it.
Yeah. No, even reading the script, I remember finishing
that reveal.
Like, oh my God, even just on the page, it just completely like jumped up and I can totally picture it. It was like, I can't wait to see what this looks like. And it did not disappoint watching the film for the first time. I'm like, oh my gosh. It's like, you feel so clever as an audience member.
You do.
Like, bring it out.
And also you think you're ahead of it and you're so not ahead of it. And I just feel like, I'm such a theater lover and the actress who plays your mother, Linda. Is just someone who in the New York theater scene is like the most revered. She did, she was in Death of a Salesman. She did a production of that in New York and sort of took this town by storm. And she's in all these Tony Kushner plays. And then You're Too Young, but The Waltons was like a show that was so a part of our life. And seeing
both
Richard
of my
Thomas,
parents, when they found out who Richard Thomas is. He's a great guy who's playing my dad. But they're like, oh my God, it's what was it called? It was like, there was some name that they called him. What was his character?
John Boy.
And my mom goes, it's John Boy. My parents were like, what do you mean? And I remember we were filming and there was like a kind of bar. It was like not like a CD, but it was like a dark place. And we just went in there, catering was set up. And so we went in there and ate, but on the TV, the Waltons was playing and it was hilarious because Richard was eating with us and it was, it is before my time, but everyone else knew about it.
Yes. I mean, maybe Sandy and Viola, everyone else probably not, but there was a time where Richard Thomas and that show, he was as famous as Sandy. I mean, just in terms of how people were obsessed and And it became a cultural thing because it was a show where they had tons of siblings, and every night they'd say goodnight, John Boy, goodnight, Mary Ellen, and they would all say goodnight to each other. And then everyone in their house would do their goodnights in their house the way the Waltons did it. It's just hilarious. And then, there he is. And he's really gone back to the theater also. Like, he's been doing all of this amazing stuff. The idea of you sort of dipping your creative toe, as it were, into these new incredible projects, not dipping, full on body plunge into these things. But then going back to school and going back to life, you know, how has that been for you? Did you feel like, I'm in a rush to get out of school because I know what I want to do and I'm not sure algebra is going to help me? Yeah. Or are you able to love being in school when you're in school?
Well, I think a little bit of both. It was tough because it's hard for teachers to accommodate when they don't really understand. You know, there's a lot of one track, go to high school, go to college. That's the only option. And I think that's the thing that's stuck in a lot of people's minds is, you know, that's not everyone's path. Even if you're not an actor, not everyone has to go to college if that's not for you. And I'm lucky enough to have the choice. I got to make the choice. Do I want to go to college or can I pursue this?
And have a family support that choice.
Exactly. And I was so lucky to have such a supportive family that allowed me to say, Emma, we see you being successful in this area and you can, you don't need to go to school because we don't see that being useful for you. And I was so happy that I didn't have to do that. But about being in high school, it's hard missing the content, but also socially when you're away and you kind of become unavailable to social interactions. And I kind of felt myself just kind of pull away from everything because it was hard to go to school and have people I really enjoyed being around and friends, but people that didn't really fully get, you know, this aspect of my life, because there was no one close to my age on either projects that I worked on. And so I think I always wanted somebody that I could talk to my age about what it feels like to grapple with both of those things. And kids I've met some wonderful people and also some not so wonderful people. And a lot of people thought that it was funny when Bernadette came out, because it's not the kind of movie I guess a teenager would watch. And they would, you know, make me the butt of the joke. And deciding to stay in high school, I think, was a great choice, albeit difficult, because I was doing the tutor stuff and all that. But I'm glad I did it because I really did make some great friends, but I think I needed that experience. I want to be as much of a fully formed person as I can and not take myself away from real life just because I get to do these awesome things. I wanted that experience. So it was difficult, and it was more difficult, but I think now that I'm in the end of it, I'm glad that I stayed and I didn't do online school or homeschool, because I did get the experience out of it. And I'm glad, even though it was tough. And it's tough trying to get people to take you seriously about something that you love when, you know, you're the girl in the movie and she thinks she's famous and all that kind of stuff. And I learned how to just suck it up and get through it. There were some days I just didn't want to go to school because it was like, I feel so alienated because of it. And I think a lot of people are confused about that, because you think like, oh, you know, people would think you were so cool for doing that. But really, especially in my community, I don't know what it is, but there was a lot of jealousy, I think, that played out in a way that seemed like, oh, we're going to make fun of you. So I think that I'm really glad that I was able to finish high school this way. And I think I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, finishing and opening myself up, allowing myself to really fully invest my time in working now.
Well, you are a second away. Like, you did it. You're a second away from the finish line.
This great time.
I am so proud of you. And I just met you. I know how hard it is. I know how people can act in the face of something that is just different from what they know. And it can be so challenging. And the fact that you hung in there and got out of it what you could and found the things that did work for you and did help you to grow. I mean, I'm hoping that it wasn't just all torture and that there were little moments of joy and laughs.
There are always good moments, even in the tough, even in the toughest years, I can always find the good stuff I got out of school.
Yeah. What's next? Do you know? Do you sort of have some ideas of what you might be doing?
I don't have any set projects right now, but things happen super fast and I am auditioning constantly. When I saw you last, there were two auditions I had to tape on here after that. And so I'm always working, and when I was doing interviews for Bernadette, I was said, nope, nothing new. And then a month later there was another project. So
do you like auditioning? Is there something about it that you enjoy or ways you can get through it?
I think I don't dislike auditioning because I love the opportunity and I love reading new scripts and seeing what's out there.
Yeah.
But I think that it's kind of a drag having to act as well as you can, as best you can. In kind of a weird setting, you're just sitting there in front of a camera. There's no other aspects of the film other than you. So I think there are some auditions that I enjoy if it's like a really exciting project that I get to do. But also there are some that, are just like, I wish I could actually film this instead of being a self-tape. I don't like absolutely love auditioning. Like, oh, I'd rather audition than be on set. But I do it because I am excited about the work that
you want to do the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. I just had an interview. The last episode that I published is with a casting director and talking so much. Because you're in Chicago, you're probably more used to it than people who live in LA and New York, where we would go in the room and the director would be there, or at least the casting director. And then you're doing chemistry reads. I mean, each step of the way, there were a lot of people involved, because you lived in Chicago, even pre-pandemic, you did most of it on tape and then were flown in to meet the Bernadette team, right? So you in some ways are more used to the kind of isolated you and your manager working on stuff together than most people. So you have not had to kind of regroup in the way that so many of us have had to figure out this self-tape beast.
I always thought it was like this normal thing that everybody just put themselves on tape and sent it out.
Right.
I've been doing that. I mean, that's how all my auditions work, unless I'm flown in. That would be the next.
Well, girl,
step.
It's working. Don't meet anybody. Keep it up.
I'm like,
well, what about how did this
in LA for it?
How did was the Unforgivable? Did you just go on tape and then? Did you end up like getting to work with the director over Zoom? Yeah. How did you?
So I went on tape once as a self tape. It was untitled because it was untitled for a while before the name was The Unforgivable. And I didn't get the full script. I just got the side. So it was just a self tape, but it was an important one. And so I remember doing it and being really excited about it. And then I was asked to FaceTime with the director, Nora. And it was like, not a callback, just a FaceTime. And Nora is like the sweetest woman. I just gushed over her. She is so cute and I love her. And she's a mother and she has this really thick German accent that is, not German in the way that's like,
Is she from Germany or does she live
in? She's German. This is her first English language film.
Well, Sandy speaks German. Would they like speak German to each other?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they would. If Nora didn't know how to describe a word or like say a word, she'll be like, how do you say so-and-so in English? And I thought that was a really cool connection because I didn't know that Sandy spoke German or even was German.
Yeah,
before
her mom.
Meeting. But the FaceTime then led to, it was probably about this, like a month, two of buffering time before I got the role. And I later learned that Sandy had seen me in Bernadette. And so I think that that connection, you know, had helped because she had seen some of my work. And I think that also was one of the reasons why, you know, the process wasn't as drawn out as Bernadette was, you know, like chemistry read this and that, because I had a film behind me and people that could possibly vouch for me. And so I think that that helped, because I wasn't flown out to LA for a chemistry read. It was like, no, we're going into rehearsals.
How did you really find out you got it?
Well, my managers and my family, usually my mom is with me, I know I get a role when everyone's on the call. And I had pneumonia at the time. This was November or December of 2019. So I had pneumonia, and I usually, like, I knock on wood, don't get sick. But I was very sick. And I was just at home, like, feeling miserable.
Are you sure it wasn't COVID? Because well, now you're hearing of, like, I know, but now we're hearing of these things. We don't know, but you felt like
crap. I don't know. It really could have been. I have my conspiracy about whatever illness I had, but I was, you know. And I just remember getting a call from my manager, Margot, and Lisa was on the phone, and it was just this moment of, like, oh my God. It's just indescribable joy to get a role and feel like your work has paid off and someone sees that in you. And it's a beautiful feeling that I think about those times often, you know, that those feelings of just, it's like a redemption. It's very, very, it's a really joyful memory to look back on. And, you know, things move quickly when you get roles, you know, they want to start filming. And so that's what happened. And the rest is history.
Well, I have to tell you that, you know, Emma and I talked the other day, and pre this recorded conversation, and the night after I spoke to you, I was leading a panel for this organization called Women in Entertainment, and it was very, you know, artist-based conversations. And something you said to me that day, I shared with the room because it was so powerful. A couple of the younger artists who were sort of starting their careers were asking us, elder statesmen, sort of any tips for getting through the hard times, right? The kind of ebb and flow and the feast or famine of being an artist. And I said, well, I spoke to this incredibly brilliant young woman earlier today who talked about one of the ways, and her name is Emma Nelson, one of the ways that she dealt with, you know, you told me about all the rejection. You had auditioned for a lot of things, yet you kept going. Mm-hmm. Only because you wanted to. You didn't have stage parents. There was no one in your life demanding you do this. This was all driven by passion and love for telling stories. And you talked about, you talked about sort of finding ways to remind yourself to be proud of yourself, that there are so many ways our mind is constantly instructing us about how to feel bad about ourselves, and to sort of really being just as mindful of the things you've done that you're proud of, even if it's just the audition and not the job that you got, or the successes you've had. And that as a culture, we're so scared of being like, am I bragging? Is it boastful?
Yeah.
And there was a way in which you just articulated it so clearly that it was none of those things. It is just being present for yourself and allowing yourself to feel good about the things that you've done, regardless of the final outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so, those moments that are like really feel good moments, like those, and holding on to them and allowing yourself to be proud of yourself. Because it's true. It's like we're wired to, you know, be our own worst critic, which is so strange to me.
Yeah.
Because we at once have to be our own support system and also keep ourselves in check. And it, especially as an actor, we're all so critical of ourselves because there's so much rejection involved, and it's very painful. And I think you know, I, that makes me so happy that you brought that up.
But it was incredible.
I just think that it is something that, it's always a practice, you know, just trying to be your own support system and being grateful for those moments and remembering them and, you know, just showing yourself love and forgiveness is really important as an actor, I think. And as a girl.
Yes. And you're seeing yourself, you know, images of yourself, you know, screens are really big. And it's also, you know, it's one thing on a tiny monitor or your computer when you're looking at yourself tape or even ADR, when you see like a snippet of something you've done, you're like, okay, wait, sure, I'm not even saying the whole thing yet, right? Like they're very triggering, those moments when, you know, you're just seeing it for the first time. And usually it's just the technicians who are running the ADR, it's not even like the director or people from the film, and you're so vulnerable and they don't understand you're seeing it for the first time. And it's a lot.
The first time I saw for ADR for The Unforgivable, I saw it. I remember being like having to physically stop myself from just pointing out little details and flaws in whether that be my performance or my face or whatever. Like, no, I'm going to allow myself to enjoy this and be proud of myself. But it's hard. It really is, especially as a teenage girl. You look at yourself and you're like, what if people look at me and they don't think I look pretty? I'm like, is that seriously what I'm thinking about right now? Seriously what I'm thinking about.
Of course. You're human. Yeah.
But it's just kind of like it's a thought pattern that I am continuously trying to break.
Yeah. Well, I do have to say that I just love watching you on film. I think the ways in which in both of these roles, and I can't wait to see all the other things you're going to do, there's something so unbelievably natural about how you tell stories. It just feels so effortless, even though I know how much work goes into it. And that's the beauty of it. You do all that work and preparation and rehearsal and thoughtfulness, and then you just go talk and listen and respond to the person you're working with, and it really shines through. You are really gifted, Emma Nelson, and thank you. Thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go, is there a little known fact that you can share with listeners about you?
Yeah, I have one that is interesting, is I am obsessed with true crime. I actually just started this new podcast called Dr. Death. I don't know if you've heard of it. Super, super good. And some people hate the genre. I love it. I do like all the documentaries, all the podcasts, all the movies about it. So interesting to me. To me, at least, it's a part of this thing that's a part of some people that is like, I cannot believe it's human. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe some people have it in them to do that. I really think it's just, I'm curious to know more the psychological aspect of it because it's so foreign to me.
And
you know, it's the same reason I watch documentaries about other stuff, to learn more about it. And I think that applies there. And also it's just like really engaging. There's not a boring moment.
All right. Well, next time we speak, you will have graduated high school. You will probably have done another incredible movie filled with Oscar winners. And I cannot wait to see what all those things are. Emma, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
One more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out, and I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved, loved, loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy, be safe. Until next time.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So, there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
The episode was edited by Nicholas Klar. We recorded in New York City. And the Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded by Georgia Famusa with backups by Caleb Famusa.